The Blue Marine Foundation podcast, sharing our passion for the wonders of the ocean.
Hello, I'm Georgina Aldana, the Ocean Awards researcher at Blue Marine Foundation. This is one of three podcasts celebrating 2024 Ocean Awards. Diego Cardeñosa is the winner of this year's innovation category. This award recognizes the person or group that has introduced innovative measures for reducing stress on the oceans. Diego is a distinguished postdoctoral scholar who uses molecular and forensic tools to fight the illegal trade in endangered sharks from Hong Kong to Latin America. Hello and congratulations, Diego.
Hi, Georgina. Thank you and honored to be here.
To begin with, how did you start being interested in sharks?
All right, that's a funny question that I get a lot, and the answer is always a tough one because I don't remember a time of my life or in my life that I decided to do sharks. You know, it's always been there. For as long as I can remember, I always wanted to be with sharks, study sharks. I always loved sharks. It's been with me since I can remember, and obviously it builds on a career as a scientist, but as a kid I used to, you know, paint little sharks to my parents all the time, and they used to give me a lot of books about sharks and movies about sharks. So they always fueled that passion that was kind of like building in the background. When I grew older, I knew I wanted to study biology and try to help sharks as I go along in my career, in my life.
So can you explain a little bit about the problem that your innovation is trying to solve?
Yeah. So as you might well know, the shark trade is an international problem, and there are a lot of source countries, and then there are supply chain endpoints, like the consumer places. So the shark fishing nations usually send the fins to those hubs. And for fins is mainly mainland China, Hong Kong, Taiwan, Singapore. Those are the areas where shark fin soup is being consumed. Then you have the shark meat trade, that the major consumer nations are Brazil and some areas in Europe. So when those shark products are being shipped or traded to different places, it's usually not the full shark. It's just the fin, or just a piece of meat, or just the body of a shark. And they can be in different stages, such as unprocessed dried fins. That means a fin that was cut from a shark and dried under the sun for around 2 weeks and then shipped. So you can see the morphology of the fin, the colorations of the fin. And a lot of the fins can be actually being identified visually. So you look at one and you say, okay, this is an oceanic white tip shark. It's very clear. But other species, it gets more challenging. And the same for the meat. You get a piece of meat, and how do you know it's from one species or the other one? For fins also gets even worse, because sometimes the fin is processed. That means all the tissue, coloration, morphology, etc., it's gone. The only thing that's left is the what we call ceratotrichia, which are filaments that make the skeleton, the cartilaginous skeleton of the fin. And that way it's impossible to visually identify. Now, a lot of the species that are being traded are now listed in a convention that deals with international trade in endangered species, actually called the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species of Wild Flora and Fauna. So every 3 years, countries that are part of this convention, is around 186 countries are part of this convention, they vote to list certain species either in Appendix 1, mainly in Appendix 1 or Appendix 2. Appendix 1 means species that are banned from international trade. The Appendix 2 species, you can do trade, but you must certify that that trade is sustainable, traceable, and legal. if you can fulfill those, then you can send those species, those fins or those species from one location to another one legally. But since I just told you that a lot of the different species are hard to identify, then law enforcement around the world has this challenge of identifying species that are in this convention versus the species that are not in this convention. And now that there's so many more species of sharks and rays on CITES, that means they also need to know within the species that are on CITES, which ones are being traded legally or not. The main innovation of what I've done, most of the time when you're doing genetic testing, it takes a long time. The problem with law enforcement is that if they do not have the necessary evidence within 24 or 36 hours, then you cannot do anything else. So you need to release the container. So for the innovation part, we needed something that was quick, that was portable, so you can run it anywhere around the world, that it's easy to use and is not too expensive to run. So with this tool, you can run any sample, extract DNA anywhere around the world. It works with processed fins, with unprocessed fins, with meat, with skin, with any product that you need to know what species of shark it is. You can achieve identification within 2 hours instead of 36 or weeks. So it's very quick. And it costs around $1 to $1.5 a sample to run. So comparing to sequencing and other platforms out there, is orders of magnitude cheaper. So that's a big innovation. How can we identify and take the lab outside the lab setting and put it in import inspection sites, in landing sites, in airports, and do genetic testing so fast that yeah, it can be done in a couple of hours. That's something that wasn't available a few years ago. And with this particular tool, we can add not just a couple of sharks, but to identify all sharks and rays with a single reaction, which is a big part of why this tool is going to become so important for law enforcement in the future. Yeah.
So how did you come up with this solution?
So back in 2018, I moved to Hong Kong for a year during my PhD, because we developed something similar. In the chemistry, it's a little different, but it identified 9 different species of sharks, some of the most common and some of the ones that were on CITES at that time. And we trained the local authorities in Hong Kong how to use it, and we participated in inspections and some seizures that they made. But since 2018, hundreds of species of sharks and rays have been included on CITES. So that way that we were tackling the problem with that chemistry back in the day, which is called species-specific primers that only identify that particular species, was not feasible. So we started looking in the literature, what was there, what could we build on from efforts that other scientists have been able to do. And there was this this protocol or this assay and this type of chemistry that we could tweak and see if that would give us what we needed, which is identify all shark species with one single reaction. And after a lot of trial and error, we stumbled into the right conditions, into the right components of the reaction that allowed us to get to where we are now.
Excellent. You touched a little bit on this, but I wanted to know if you could elaborate on it. Can you explain how the technique that you have developed works?
Sure. So to not to get too technical, the easy way it works is you grab a fin that you don't know what it is. You take a little tiny piece of it, imagine a quarter of a grain of rice, something really, really small. You put it on a tube with a DNA extraction buffer that breaks down the cell walls and and gives you the DNA ready to use for a PCR reaction. So imagine a COVID test, but instead of getting the or identifying the COVID virus, we're identifying a shark species. But it, in principle, is very similar to what we were using during the pandemic for the virus. So after the extraction in the field, you take a little bit of that DNA, you mix it with other reagents, and you put it in a machine that is almost at the size of a toaster. It's really small. And with a computer, you set the right conditions for the reaction to occur, and then the machine does its work for 2 hours or 1.5 hours. And then once it's done, on the computer screen, you would have different curves, it gives you plots with shapes of curves. And each curve and each shape belongs to a particular species. So just by reading those curves, you know what you have, because the curve is read is really reliable and reproducible. It's always the same curve for the same species. So that way, without sequencing and without extra bioinformatic or other steps, just by looking at a plot, you can say, oh, okay, that's a hammerhead. Oh no, that's a blue shark, or that's a tiger shark. So it's very simple to use. You don't need a lot of laboratory experience with it. If you've ever been in a bar and you made any cocktail, you can do this. It's just making a cocktail, but in tiny, tiny amounts, drops, just little drops. And that's all you need to do. The rest is just clicking a couple buttons on a computer, and the machine does the work itself, so you don't need to do anything extra. So with our work in the past, we realized that we need to do everything as easy as possible for the uptake by law enforcement to be good and real. Otherwise, it becomes a really cool scientific project, but the steps from being a scientific endeavor and project to make a real use outside a scientific conditions or outside academia, it's very different, because you're gonna be dealing with people that don't know how to use a pipette before, don't have a clue of what a PCR is or what a primer does. All you need to show them is mix these two little things on these amounts, put them on the machine, and click a button. That's as easy as it needs to be. If you complicate it any further than that, then the uptake is going to be either slower, or it's not going to be uptaken by the law enforcement officers and the law enforcement personnel out there that are the real users and the ones that are at the forefront of the problem with illegal trade.
Yeah, and how is this innovation going out from the lab to real life, to the fish markets?
So what we do is we build everything that we use, the machine and the pipette, is off the shelf. So it's technology that has been out there before. What we invented was the little cocktail that goes in the machine. That goes in the machine. So basically, we usually get grants or money or donations or whatever it is, funds, and we put together kits for the different countries. We approach the country and say, hey, we realize that a lot of the fins that arrive to Hong Kong come from your country. Would you be interested in applying this in one of your major ports? Do you have any problems identifying any species, whether they're CITES or not CITES? And then if they say yes and they're interested, then we go to that country, give away the kit to them to use, give them trainings, and then they're off and ready to use it. And we keep close contact with them all the time. If they encounter any problem, we're there to help them fix it or to answer any questions. And we've been able to build like a nice community of users of these machines that are using it, and they're applying it to their normal day-to-day inspection. So that's the model that we see it works the best, because once they see that we're building the capacity, we're giving them everything they need, then they start using it right away.
And how do you think this solution can be scaled?
It's just a matter, so the way this can scale is just a matter of funds, which is usually what happens with, you know, with research projects. The more funds we can get, the more funds we can collect to build this machine, to build these toolkits and send them to different countries, go to different countries and do the trainings and really take over the world with these technologies. It's a matter of the resources to take these kits where they need to be deployed. And the cool thing is that once the capacity is built, that means once they have their machines, once they have their reagents, their knowledge on how to use it, it can be very easily expanded to other species, because illegal wildlife trade, it doesn't stop with sharks. It goes to amphibians, to birds, to mammals, to reptiles, to plants. So in theory, everything that has DNA can be identified using this tool. So once the capacity is there in different countries, then we can come in and say, okay, do you have problems with bushmeat? Or do you have problems with identifying any other products or illegal wildlife trade? Then we can come in back to the lab, design tools, validate them, and then send it to them and say, hey, do the same thing that you were doing with sharks, but instead of using this thing or this component in your little cocktail, just change it for this one. And that will allow you to identify mammals, or that would allow you to identify birds. So sharks are it's a big problem, obviously, for sharks. It's one of the groups of vertebrates that are facing a real global conservation crisis, and it's really urgent. But there are other species that are having the same issue. So sharks are our guinea pig, and they help us open the doors in different countries and different areas. But once that door is open, then we can come in with other tools and protocols to help other species that are subject to illegal wildlife trade.
Yeah, and this really relates to my next question. What are your hopes for the future, both in the short term and in the long term?
So for the short term, really see an uptake of these tools as wide as possible around the world. I think that is key to have the impact that this tool can really have. And then once import inspections are normalized and everybody, oh yeah, we test for this or that with genetics and the airports or the landing sites, then in the long term, I would expect the compliance of the convention and the objectives of this convention, that is to regulate trade and to somehow put a stop into the illegal trade of these species, to be really well implemented. Because usually from listing one species to be fully compliant, everybody to be fully compliant, it takes a lot of work. But this is one key aspect that once it's implemented, I think the enforcement of the regulations of the convention will be higher, and then we can see positive change. So this is the first step, but once the uptake is high and the implementation is correct, I believe we're going to see the conservation outcomes that we're all fighting to see in the future.
So Diego, it's been a fascinating conversation. I was wondering if you want to give a final message to our listeners.
The important thing here is to really drive the message of how a really simple, I would say, it's a very simple solution from an academic perspective and from a scientific point can really have a very applicable and, you know, like a applied outcome in the real world and with non-scientists, and how different stakeholders can come together to create something that really pushes the boundary of what we can do to solve such a complicated issue as illegal wildlife trade or illegal shark trade in this case.
Well, once again, Diego, thank you so much for your time, and a huge congratulations for winning this award.
Thank
We're
you.
Really excited to see how this innovation is going to pan out. Thank you for sharing it with us.
Thank you so much.
So, as a reminder, this is one of three podcasts celebrating the 2024 Ocean Awards. So please look for this podcast wherever you find your podcast and wait for the other two, because it's the Lifetime Achievement podcast and the Science category winner. So thank you for listening and stay tuned for the other two podcasts.
The Blue Marine Foundation podcast. For more episodes and further insights, go to bluemarinefoundation.com.